Where are you? Are you in bed? Or are you leaving the first human footprint on Mars? Are you jogging? Or are you about to pull off the heist of the century? Are you in your car? Or are you praying those red eyes in the darkness can't see you?
Every time he sees me, his eyes light anywhere. Up.
Audible.
I can
get
almost
first
hear his heartbeat
free,
faster.
Feel every word.
He looks at me the same way he did when we first met.
Terms apply.
For him, it's love at first sight every day. For me, it's heartbreaking.
Loving someone who's living with dementia is not easy. For support, advice, or to make a donation, visit dementiasa.org.
You're listening to Vuka Online.
You are rocking with the best.
Hi there, and welcome to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. The show is all about healthcare, obviously. And it's making sure that we give our healthcare providers and healthcare as an industry a platform to have a voice. It's also important that often we put people in healthcare on pedestals. They're there to look after us. They're there to make sure that we work, and we forget that they are people, that they are human, that they get tired and hungry and disappointed just like the rest of us. So what you're also finding is this show is about us being able to talk about things that we wouldn't normally talk about. Often subjects in healthcare are hush-hush. Sure, we don't talk about those at a party. We don't talk about those on LinkedIn. But this show is about making healthcare mainstream. It's about making sure that it is something that we talk about and that we're not embarrassed to talk about. More about me. I am a coach. I am a master coach and a master mentor. I come from healthcare. Healthcare is my home, but healthcare is also my passion. The people in healthcare are my passion. Today, I'm wanting to talk about something unusual, which is rare diseases. You know, we know about those diseases that a lot of people have got, but what happens when you're the only one, or there's only 10 or 100, or yeah, who knows how many people who are experiencing the same thing as you? When we come back, we're going to introduce you, I will introduce you to my guest, and we're going to have a very interesting talk about rare diseases.
How do you know the life or personal coach you're about to work with is who they say they are? How do you know if they can do the job? At the Africa Board for Coaching, Consulting and Coaching Psychology, we can tell you. So before you share your secrets and spend your money, check with us first. Visit www.abccp.com or call us on 012-751-7608. The ABCCP, the professional body for coaches.
Broadcasting worldwide online 24/7.
It's Vuka Online, your inspiration radio station.
Welcome back. You tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. Hopefully you have logged into the app on your app store, or also you may have accessed us on www.vukaonlineradio.co.za. Today we're talking about rare diseases, which might seem quite strange. But with me today I have a lady named Kelly Duplessis. And she is the CEO and founder of Rare Diseases South Africa. So let's just say hello to her for the moment, and then we'll tell you more about her. Hi, Kelly.
Morning, Colleen. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Thank you for being with us. Okay, so now more about Kelly. She's going to share with us later about how she got to be in this, her calling into rare diseases. But just some more information. She is the founding member of AfricaRare.org. She's the board member of Genetic Alliance South Africa. She was the vice chair in the past. She's also a member of Patient Advocates Constituent, a member of the Consortium Assembly of International Rare Diseases Research Consortium. And she has won quite a few awards. So CEO of the year in 2021, the winner of the Best Patient-Led Health Advocacy by Healthcare and Pharmaceutical Awards in 2020. She's been the finalist in Women of Substance, Woman of the Year for healthcare, and she's also been a winner of the African Leadership Award in healthcare. So let's find out more about you, Kelly.
So
could you share with us your...
Yes? No, I was going to say, so I think first and foremost, I'm a mom. I think that that's probably the most relevant thing on my CV is being a mom to a rare disease child.
So could you share the story with us?
So essentially, I was a relatively young mom. I had my first child when I was 24, and, you know, kind of things weren't as smooth as I thought they would be, but I couldn't quite pinpoint anything in particular that was wrong due to my lack of experience, I think, as both a parent and I think as an adult, given my age. And, you know, as time went by, I continued to notice the lack of development from my son's perspective. You know, I used to compare him to other babies at the wellness clinics, etc., and I could always see that he seemed to lag behind. And as time went by, the lags became more and more evident. And it was particularly around his gross motor skills, as well as his fine motor. So he couldn't roll over. He wasn't sitting. He wasn't reaching for a bottle. He wasn't doing any of those things. And he also used to have quite a significant issue in terms of feeding and would often choke. And as time went by, that progressed to reoccurring chest infections. And I think, you know, really from about 6 months old, I had this niggle that something really wasn't right. And as we started investigating, you know, eventually after me being diagnosed with, you know, baby blues, they told me I was suffering from, you know, postnatal depression, and that I must accept that not all kids are the same. And, you know, as time went by, we realized that something was in fact wrong, and it took us almost 11 months to get to a confirmed diagnosis. And that diagnosis was Pompe disease, which is a very, very rare neuromuscular condition.
So that must really have been very concerning for you.
Yeah, I think, and, you know, what was very concerning as well was that I was pregnant at the time with my second child, and this condition is genetic. So I not only was informed that the child I had, you know, had very, very limited opportunities going forward, and it was likely that we were going to lose him to this condition, but I had a 25% chance of my second pregnancy being impacted by the same thing. It was a very, very overwhelming time in our life.
And I think made worse as well, Kelly, by the fact that you knew something was wrong, but no one was listening to you.
Correct. I think, and you know, that doubt, I think that you often have, particularly as a first-time parent, where, you know, if you go to a professional and they say to you, it's nothing, you kind of are inclined to want to believe that it's nothing. And you really do start doubting yourself. And I think it's probably one of the most frustrating, but also diminishing experiences, because while you're doubting yourself, you're losing valuable time to get an accurate diagnosis. And in all rare diseases, the earlier you implement treatment, the better the outcomes are. So it's not just a case of the time lost, but, you know, and the additional pain and suffering that the patient goes through in that time. But it's also the fact that you lose ability that you can't reclaim back after starting treatment. So, you know, early intervention is critical.
Okay. Yes, totally understand that. So how did you eventually get a diagnosis?
So quite ironically, after literally being in and out of hospital for about 6 weeks, and being discharged from hospital that morning, we came back home and my dad looked at my son and said to me, you know, he's still blue around his mouth. You need to do something. And out of pure frustration, I kind of shouted at my dad and I said, I don't know what more you want me to do. I've done everything that I possibly can. They told us to come home. And I picked him up and I went to the closest hospital, which we hadn't actually been to. It was the closest hospital to where we lived. And I went and kind of camped in a pediatrician's rooms and was questioned for not having an appointment and why I was there. And I said, well, I'm not leaving until my son sees this doctor. So, and it had just, as you know, fate had intervened in the sense that just a week prior to that, he had had a medical rep come through his offices who had made him aware of this condition, made him aware of the new developments in that. Had we seen him 3 months earlier, it might not have been top of his mind to test for this disease, or even 2 weeks prior. So it was perfect timing in our bigger journey. And he said to me there and then, look, your child's got acute pneumonia in both lungs that needs to be dealt with immediately. We're going to have to put him back into hospital. But he said, I agree with you, something's not right, and I want to test him for this very rare condition. And turns out that that's what it was that we had.
So how amazing, and I'm going to be sharing this interview with the medical reps of South Africa, because often they don't realize what an important role they play. You know, and if that rep hadn't been through his office to come and educate, to come and remind or share knowledge, can you imagine your outcome then?
Correct. And, you know, I was lucky enough to actually, obviously, because this has become part of a career, to have developed a relationship with the rep. And I'm still in contact with her today or over a decade later. But how vital her role in educating on the broader components of this disease was. And not just to say, look, there's this rare condition, you probably won't see it, you might not have seen it, but there's a drug. You know, I'm so grateful for the fact that she took the time to really educate the clinician on the vast diversity of this disease and all the little signs and symptoms, because those little things are what add together to actually, you know, have the outcome of the condition. So, I mean, just how grateful we are that she did such a sterling job in doing that, and that she had obviously struck a chord that it remained top of his mind.
So we'll take a moment there and say yay for all medical reps. Sometimes their lives are very much mundane. They don't realize that they make a difference. And, of course, they don't always see the outcome.
Correct.
So, yeah, very grateful for them. And then also very important from a narrative medicine point of view that, you know, when you take the time to listen, the patient will tell you, or the patient's mother in this case will tell you. So yeah, also yay for that clinician.
Correct. I think it's an important interview. I think it's important for clinicians to always also remember moms, as paranoid as we can be, particularly young moms and first time moms, when you've got someone that is almost desperate in front of you, understand that they're coming to you out of desperation and listen to what they say is going on in their gut. And very often we don't articulate the issues as well as we should from a medical perspective. So what we're saying to you doesn't necessarily come across in terms of what you've learned. And I think that this is why patient storytelling is such a vital part of awareness, because how a patient presents might not be how they were explained to you in the medical textbook.
I think from a clinician point of view is that clinicians are taught to look for the outcome, look to the diagnosis, and as fast as possible. So it's, oh, she mentioned this, tick that box, tick this box, you know, and it's almost like, zoom, okay, now we've got this. As opposed to going into where you might describe it as something but mean something else, because yes, moms are not all medical people.
Correct. And I think obviously with rare diseases, the dichotomy between the obvious stuff and the rare stuff makes it very, very difficult, because you are trained to think of the obvious and not to necessarily think of all the weird and wonderful different conditions that are out there. And very often these diseases in their early onset, in the earlier phases of them, mimic very, very common stuff. So my son looked like he could be asthmatic. He looked like he could have, chronic asthma and recurrent asthma. There was nothing outside of the gross motor development that would scream anything neuromuscular. And yet that's what it was.
So before we go for a break, Kelly, what would have happened to your son if he hadn't had the diagnosis? And he hadn't had, obviously, the intervention from a treatment point of view.
essentially his muscles would have deteriorated to the point that he would have lost his ability to breathe.
So that would have been tragic.
Absolutely.
All right. So when we come back, we're going to talk more about what a rare disease is and what treatments are available.
No one decides to go into debt. It creeps up on you.
Hey.
Slowly.
Ah!
Debt follows debt. Follows debt. Unless you do something about it. Face your debt problems before they cripple you. It's time to do something.
Stay woke with Vuga Online Radio.
Welcome back. You tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. Today we're speaking about rare diseases, and we're speaking specifically to Kelly du Plessis, who is the CEO and founder of Rare Diseases South Africa. Her son, at 11 months, was diagnosed with a very rare disease called Pompe disease, and she shared with us that from pillar to post and not being believed, it was only when she found a clinician who'd recently spoken to a salesperson or a rep and had this Pompe disease top of mind. So now let's look at rare diseases, Kelly. What does that mean?
So up until recently, it was a very, very wide open box, but due to our advocacy work, we finally managed to get a definition that has been recognized. And that is, it needs to impact one person in every 2,000 people for it to be considered rare. We do stress the point that this kind of borderline definition should never be the cutoff point in terms of access to treatments and molecules, but it is more of a guideline in terms of what needs to be included in the rare box and what doesn't. It's been a long time that it has taken us to actually get consensus on that, because there's no global definition. And obviously things can be rare in certain areas of the world and not rare in others. Take something like sickle cell disease, which in Central Africa is as common as influenza, yet in the South African context, it's considered rare. So, actually developing a definition that was suitable to the country has been a significant part of what we've had to do over the last decade to get to a certain point. And I'm glad that we're there finally.
So it sounds like lots of work on your part. So obviously as a mommy, you were busy fighting for treatment, for diagnosis, for recognition of the disease that your son has, but you clearly have taken it on for lots of parents.
Yeah, Colleen, I think that I was lucky enough to be young enough to be able to pivot my career and not be bitter about it. I think if I'd had him much later on in life and I'd had an established career that I ultimately would have had to give up to advocate for him and others, it might have been different. But not only that, I kind of knew that I looked at him and I couldn't understand how this had happened to us. And I knew that we had to turn that pain into something that was purposeful. And for me, having a tenacious personality and having, the ability to tackle these things and to argue them, I kind of realized, okay, well, obviously this has been thrown in my world for a particular reason. And as a result of that, I needed to do something to change it for those families that came after us, because I never wanted anybody else to have gone through the same experience. And we are definitely by no means close to having got to everything that we want to do. But I definitely know that even the fact that there's a place for rare disease patients who are newly diagnosed to pick up the phone and phone means that we've had a significant impact.
So in South Africa, you're saying that one in every 2,000 would have whatever the disease is that this person has?
Correct, yes. So that's the prevalence, one in 2,000.
And that's clearly why you have something South African, but you also have African. Because what might be rare in Africa is not necessarily rare in South Africa.
Correct. And I also felt that as a South African living in almost a more developed part of Africa than many other countries, that we could use the experience that we've had in terms of advocacy here to assist other countries in terms of reaching their mandates and getting access and services available to their patients. So that is why we made the decision to broaden, you know, to broaden our horizons and try do stuff that could assist our fellow African continent, you know, country members as well.
Okay. So, and at this moment, could you share with us how somebody would contact you?
So the best place to contact us is via our website, which is rarediseases.co.za. But social media has been an absolute win in terms of connecting patients with us. So you can find us on all the major social media platforms. And a simple Google search, Rare Diseases in South Africa, you'll certainly find us. And otherwise, you can always send a WhatsApp to our WhatsApp line, which is 072-476-7552. And then our lovely Nomsa from our office will connect you and you know, guide your hand, hold your hand through the guidance process.
Could you give the number again, Kelly?
It's 072-476-7552.
Thank you. And then speak to Nomsa.
Speak to Nomsa.
Okay. All right. So now talk to us more about advocacy. What are you advocating for?
So we are advocating essentially for rare diseases to be recognized and effectively treated for improved quality of life. You know, we understand that for 5% of rare disease patients, you have a molecule that's available. For 95%, there is only supportive care. And as a result of that, there's this notion that for 95% of our population, there's nothing that we can do for you. Which is not correct. I mean, social support, providing psychosocial support, referring them for counseling, improved pain medication, mobility aids, giving them access to educational material, that all improves the patient's quality of life. So there's always something that can be done for those patients, even if it's not necessarily a clinical drug or device. And I think that's very, very important thing to recognize is that there is always something that can be done.
So when you speak about a molecule, are you meaning a drug or a medicine?
Yes. So only 5% of rare diseases have a commercial treatment available.
Okay. So what you're saying is important. There may actually be no drug. There may be no medicine for your loved one, but there certainly is some sort of support.
Correct. That's correct. Yes.
I would imagine that even just finding people who are experiencing the same thing as you or your loved one must be reassuring.
Absolutely. I think to find, you know, we refer to them, our patients, as warriors, and you find your tribe is a vital component to coping and to succeeding. And it's not because we give great medical advice or anything like that. We don't change your journey, but we understand it. And I think when you're having a really bad day, to speak to someone who truly gets it really gives you the tools that are needed to actually just face the day and, you know, get up and keep moving. And just to have your family of people that really get you, I think just makes such a difference. And then obviously to be able, you know, I remember very often you'll speak to patients and from a clinician's perspective, they're not living with the diseases. So they can't give you practical tools and tips. But, you know, for a patient that's impacted by multiple sclerosis to understand how they can better use a device to pick something up off the floor or what handrails are the best to install in their home or, you know, it's practical everyday stuff that speaking to other patients can provide you with. And it's the everyday stuff that makes these diseases unbearable. It's not the disease itself. It's the accumulative effect of the everyday living with the challenges that it presents. And if you can address those challenges, you find that you have a much better, better rounded experience than if you were isolated and alone.
And also by reaching out to other people who've done it, who've walked the journey, it's also like standing on the shoulders of giants where you're not having to repeat it, work it out for yourself. You know, so it's so much frustration can be taken away by just saying, hey, you know, you can pick something up off the floor this way.
Correct. And I think, I mean, even if it's, you know, you might have moved from Durban to KZN, I mean, from KZN to Cape Town. And then you ask the question, you know, I'm moving, my husband's been transferred, I need to know which neurologist is dealing with this condition over there. And we'll be able to say, well, these are the five neurologists that we know are treating patients in that area. Makes your life so much easier than having to go through, you know, bumping your own head against the wall. You know, we shouldn't all have to collectively bump our heads. We can certainly help each other with the processes.
Okay, so let's pop out for a break and we will be back soon.
Listen to this.
Up against the wall.
Took you long enough.
Spread him.
Whoa, that's a little rough.
Oh! Oof.
And now the same thing in pink.
Up against the wall.
Took you long enough.
Spread him.
Oh, that's a little rough. Ooh. Oh! Ooh. Mm.
If a color can make something sound kinky, imagine how it can make it look. Metal Paints, the right color matters. Visit metalpaints.co.za.
Broadcasting worldwide, online 24/7.
It's Vuga Online, your inspiration radio station.
Welcome back. You tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. I'm speaking to Kelly Duplessis, who is the CEO of Rare Diseases South Africa. In South Africa, the definition of rare diseases is 1 in 2,000, which may be different in the rest of the continent. But it's very important that as a mom or a dad or somebody with a rare disease, that you reach out. Kelly has shared with us that they are on all social media as Rare Diseases in South Africa, and also rarediseases.co.za is their website. You may also send a WhatsApp, you said, I think, Kelly?
Yes.
Or phone, WhatsApp, okay, yes. You can send a WhatsApp to 072-476-7552 and speak to NOMSA.
Correct.
Okay, Kelly. What else do we need to know? Well, something that I'm thinking about actually is from there is no molecule, there is no drug, there is no medicine. Is it because there isn't one available or is there another reason?
So it's twofold. Often there isn't one available globally. I mean, one simply has not been developed yet. And then the second is obviously because of the fact that we're in South Africa, accessibility to innovative drugs is not easy. And that is a massive barrier and a massive frustration. I mean, it was what we experienced. We were told, you know, there is a drug, it's just been FDA approved, but you can't have it because you live here. And I was like, no, I'm going to have it. If it's somewhere, I'm going to get it. And I could not fathom the complexities that they were telling me, you know, I was going to have to overcome to get access to this drug. I mean, it was just unfathomable for me. I had no idea of the, you know, the bureaucratic process to drug access. And so we've spent a lot of time working on those processes and developing the relationships with the likes of SAHPRA to be able to navigate those challenges. And then obviously, you know, SAHPRA approval is one thing. The next is reimbursement. And that, I think we spend probably 90% of our day arguing with funders around reimbursement challenges and getting, you know, getting access for these patients, because very often these drugs are expensive, which we understand. And while I understand that a conversation needs to happen around pricing, I also understand that it's not the patient's fault that they were diagnosed with something that has a very expensive molecule. And price alone should not be the only consideration to patients accessing treatments. So we spend a lot of time working on that particular element and, you know, in accessing these innovative products for these patients. And then there's also this notion that all rare disease treatments are so expensive. And it's not the case at all. You take something like congenital hypothyroidism, it's 30 rand a month to treat. I mean, it's not a groundbreaking treatment. A lot of the inborn errors of metabolism require dietary changes. And, you know, it's a case of either adding protein, eliminating carbohydrates or something from your diet. Those patients go on to live full and healthy lives. So it doesn't always require exceptional expensive interventions. But when that is the only solution for you, it doesn't make sense to me that we can't have it because, you know, our country's a bit far behind in that aspect. And we just work really hard every day to make sure that we improve the access, you know, access for patients in South Africa.
Okay, so I see what happens is that people would associate rare with a lot of money.
Always.
Okay, so rare are not necessarily pink diamonds that cost a fortune. It is more that rare only refers to one in 2,000, as you said.
Correct. There's this notion of opening the floodgates in terms of if you start funding one rare disease, you're going to get this whole host of patients that are going to come in and break the bank. But realistically, there's not many of us out there to do that. So in a decade of doing this work, I haven't seen those floodgates open yet. And please believe me, I've been trying to find these patients. No one's trying harder than we are. And if we haven't seen the floodgates open, it's unlikely that anyone else is going to.
It also seems very sad for 30 rand a month for somebody with congenital hypothyroidism not to get treatment.
Right. And I mean, that brings about a whole nother discussion with regards to diagnostics and newborn screening and those early interventions that play such a pivotal part in terms of early intervention that are also just not accepted and not easily made available and not accessible to so many, which, I mean, if you look at the cost investment for newborn screening and the benefit, the cost benefit ratios, I mean, it's nonsensical that we still don't do it, but it just hasn't happened yet, although we try.
So what is currently covered in newborn screening?
Newborn screening is still not mandated in South Africa at all. But I mean, overseas, some countries offer up to like 42 tests on a single newborn screening panel. We would just like to see like 6 or 7 of the really easy interventional, like PKU as an example, galactosemia, those conditions that require dietary interventions. We'd like to see those be provided for as a starting point, because something like congenital adrenal hypothyroidism, those patients lose like one IQ point a day if they're not medicated on time. And, it's such a simple intervention to save them a life of disability.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that the earlier we pick it up, the earlier we put in, especially a dietary intervention, the more likely the child is not going to see the effects. But
correct.
if we keep on going, day, we cannot undo it.
Exactly right. That's exactly the problem. And, from our perspective and someone who's seen the disability and the compounded disability and disadvantages that come with missing that diagnosis, it's not just the child's disability, or the patient's disability, but it then becomes an issue in terms of, social care and social welfare, education, work opportunities, being able to be a functional member of society. All those things are impacted simply because we just didn't do a test at birth that could have prevented it all.
And not only is it impacting the person who has the disease, it's also impacting that whole social circle, the family to begin with.
Correct. And you've probably taken a mom out of, being able to provide for her household and be employed to being unemployed because she has to provide for this child or look after this patient. So there's always a primary caregiver that ultimately, so you've lost two people from the workforce at the end of the day. And you've now got two people relying on social welfare that it was completely preventable from the beginning.
And then where does genetic screening fit in here? Do we offer that, Kelly, from a prenatal point of view?
So genetic screening genetic services in general are so under-resourced in South Africa, and it's such a sad reality. We've actually made the decision and we've taken a genetic counselor on our staff now. To try and bridge that gap, to provide services and augment what is not available in the state sector in many parts of the country, because it is such a critical intervention. Even explaining to a mom why it is that her child has been born with this and making her aware of the fact that future subsequent pregnancies would have the same risk prevents another life coming into the world with the same problem. And that, I mean, there's no cost to doing that. And yet we still can't get that right. So genetic screening, cascade screening, familial screening, education, you know, obviously advanced maternal age, NIPT screen, all of those things make such a big impact at the end of the day.
And it also comes down as simply to, you know, when you're talking a one in four chance or a 25% chance. So many people don't understand that if you have four children, it doesn't mean that one will not be okay and three will be fine. You know, only when you're looking at 100 or 200 do you then get 25% of. So it's 25% of each pregnancy.
Correct. And, you know, for so many, 25% seems like, you know, I'd chance it. But I'm like, well, yeah, this is my son is the 25%. You know, it doesn't, 25% is actually a big percentage when you look at the quality of life that patient's going to be subjected to.
I don't think people understand that genetic diseases that are recessive are all 25%, but then so are dominant diseases also only 25%. But yes. Okay, yeah. So that's where it's so important that you do have a genetic counselor then.
Correct. We just got to the point where, I mean, you know, even advocating for posts for genetic services in South Africa, we've got such brilliant genetic services that qualify and graduate, and there's no posts available for them. So we just made the decision to start, as opposed to trying to fix that problem, to try and employ them elsewhere. And I hope other organizations similar to us take the same approach to, you know, to be able to augment what's not available in state. Like, we cannot sit back and wait for government to find the ideal positioning point for them to start looking at fixing these problems. As the community, we need to start doing it ourselves.
Yes. So I love the fact that you've jumped in and you've found your own solutions, which obviously serve the country.
That's the aim. Yeah. We'd like to be much further along, but this is, at least it's a start.
Okay. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have take home messages and what it is that the public and healthcare professionals can do for rare diseases.
If you're enjoying this interruption and find the sound of my voice captivating, you may be experiencing extreme boredom.
Try new, fast-acting Subaru Impreza in hatch or sedan, formulated with symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. Cure boredom fast with new Impreza.
Vuga Online Radio, your inspiration radio station.
Welcome back. You tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. Today we are speaking to Kelly Duplessis about rare diseases. She is a mom with a son with a rare disease, and she shared her personal story with us and how that has led her to ultimately fight for other parents, to fight for other people with rare diseases. She says that our definition that has taken a long time to get to is 1 in 2,000 in South Africa. She shared with us the different options that you have to be able to contact them. Please don't sit out there on their own. Also to emphasize the fact that if you think that there's something wrong, please don't keep quiet. Please keep on and certainly contact the Rare Diseases South Africa. So Kelly, from a healthcare professional, from the public's perspective, what can we do to help?
So thanks, Colleen. It's a good question. I think that there's this perception that as NGOs, we're always just wanting funds. While money certainly does help, it's not all that we need. We often needing access to skills and services. You know, I'm thinking if there's any medical reps that are listening, very often we are needing to contact someone to find out why there's a stock shortage of a particular drug, or if we can find drug in another province, etc., because our patients can't get it at their local hospitals. And, you know, just to have a list of people that we can refer to that can assist in navigating those challenges helps. From a healthcare professional's perspective, we are very often looking for patients to be seen on an urgent basis and, you know, kind of skip the standard referral process. We're always looking for skills and expertise in terms of our educational webinars and all of that. You know, from a general public perspective, get involved, volunteer, even as employers, be more compassionate. Find out who works in your workforce that has got these conditions. Which families do you employ that have these conditions in their homes? You know, be a little bit more understanding. Take the time to learn. And all of those things go on to help us at the end of the day. It's not always just about money. But if you've got money, we'll take that as well. We'll never say no.
Yeah, we don't ever say no to money. But yeah, it's basically saying to people out there that don't feel like, oh, I don't have anything to give. You have a huge amount to give in terms of time, talent, strengths, connections, and to also support, to make sure that Kelly and her whole team don't feel like they're just little, that they're rare as well, fighting out in the sea of overwhelm.
Correct.
So we certainly will be in contact with all those medical reps. We will get you a list of people to talk to make sure that you know about shortages or not shortages. And certainly, yeah, from a healthcare perspective, who can reach out to you from a webinar point of view, let's make things happen. It's just very little things that you can do.
Correct. You know, very often, like a simple thing is taking our pamphlets and posters and putting them up in the rooms or the service areas that you might call on. That saves us having to pay a courier to get them there. You know, like, it's such little things sometimes. All those little things go on to help at the end of the day. And most importantly, if you know families that are impacted by a rare disease that need assistance, let them know about us so that we can help them.
Okay, so I don't think you're asking for the world. I think they're all very simply overcome that we can make a plan. And certainly with Medical Reps Africa, we will step up.
Well, that's great to hear. We'd love that.
Yeah. Okay, so in closing, Kelly, any last thoughts?
Just thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time. And, you know, just bear these rare and wonderful things top of mind. And, you know, to everybody listening, we are all on this earth together. We all need to help each other through it. Show a little compassion. Help where you can. You know, get educated. And just get involved in whatever way it is that is possible for you.
All right. And then also to reach out to family and loved ones of somebody who's affected. Because you know what? Sometimes when we end up being able to lean just for a little bit, it makes the burden and the journey so much easier.
That's correct.
So hop out there and make some tea for somebody. Okay, Kelly, thank you for joining us. Thank you for all your information. And thanks to your son and your other son for sharing their mommy with the whole of South Africa.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. You've been tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. We've been talking to Kelly Duplessis about rare diseases. Please step up. There's not so much that's not so difficult. Realize that whatever it is that you're able to contribute makes a massive difference. See you next time.
The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is a professional development center for professionals who aim to improve their professional standing. This means that the learning programs we run are more than just academic programs. They are work-based programs that focus on leveraging your current experience as a professional to build your overall profile. A year down the line, the Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is developing into a preferred center for professional development in Pretoria, with 8 professional development faculties including accounting, teaching, entrepreneurship, as well as IT and many more. For more information, go to acwbl.org or dial +27 12 751 7608. The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning, where work is learning.
Vuga Online Radio, your inspiration radio station.
Since 2017, we are proud to associate ourselves with some of the best jazz music in the country and the continent. Sibusiso Mashilwane, Zoe Mudika, Ntuthuzo Makatini, Tandindule, Tabang Tabane, and many others. This year, we are at it again, so we invite musicians, music companies, radio stations, jazz clubs to nominate yourselves and those who deserve recognition. Visit www.zajazzawards.co.za, then come and join us. Whether online or face-to-face, come and celebrate, venerate, and recognize jazz with us for the Mzansi Jazz Awards. See you there.